This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, April 18th, 2023. Before we get started, we issued a special edition podcast late yesterday, so please do have a look at that. It was a great conversation with our special guest, Emile Sarrau, head of AI with Droids Agency, where we discussed all things AI, its applications, its implications, both very positive and potentially very negative, and how to deal with some of those implications. I really think it was a great conversation with myself and Peter Garnry. And of course, the special guest, Emile Sarrau. So have a listen to that when you get the time. Save it for the weekend if you want to. We also did a part one. This was part two of the conversation. Part one, a bit more focused on the sort of investment opportunities in the space. That one was recorded and put out on April 6th. And you can find that slotted in with our normal list of daily podcasts. So have a look at those two when you get the chance. And now back to today's podcast. Markets in a sort of holding pattern here, at least in terms of the equity market. Peter, you're with us today on what we're seeing in terms of earnings. Not a whole lot yesterday with it being a Monday. I thought the more interesting thing was the extension higher in bond yields, as we saw not normally first-tier data you look at, but this U.S. April Empire Manufacturing Survey coming in at positive 10.8 versus, I believe it was minus 19 expected and something like minus 25 previously. This is a whiplash turnaround. Begs the question of whether we're seeing some kind of follow through, feed through from the all of these huge packages, basically new industrial policy from the U.S., the Chips and Science Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. Is this finally starting to show up in the numbers? It's only one survey. It's the first one of the month. There are a bunch of other ones, but it's something I think very much something that bears watching as we see the rest of these surveys rolling in, and certainly a game changer for where the economy is if we're seeing significant feed through there. But that that jump in yields, and it was quite a solid jump all along the yield curve, 8 to 10 basis points, not spooking risk sentiment, Peter.
No, not at all. And you have shown a very specific futures contract there. If you take the continuous futures contract on the S&P 500, we actually had the second highest close for the year yesterday. So in total return parlance, we only very, very, very small way from printing a new a new close that is the highest for the cycle. So that's something to watch, of course, as the rally extends here. And what's interesting in the internals, if you look across that, I mean, you had energy, which is it's a pro-cyclical part of the economy. Also, you know, consumer durables and apparel were both weak, and media and entertainment were weak. And then if you look at the other side of the spectrum, you had software and services rallying a little bit yesterday. Typically, it's very correlated with the media and entertainment industry groups, but not yesterday. And then real estate seems to be the big winner yesterday. I don't know really what to take from that reaction. I didn't see any specific news on real estate stock. We did have some news coming out from Charles Schwab. I'll just briefly mention it because I don't have it in the stocks to watch because the price reaction was yesterday. But they've seen their deposits decline by staggering $140 billion is just in one year. So that's a 30% decline. A lot of the customers are moving into money market funds, but the share price reacted positively despite they holding their share buybacks, etc. So it was maybe that was what sort of calmed the overall financial sector, and that also stabilized the real estate sector. We saw banks as well rallying. So, but otherwise, I think it's we're just grinding slightly higher in equities. We need something next to be the big catalyst, and we'll get a lot of the Q1 earnings in the technology sector next week, and of course, being a very big part of the market cap weight in the U.S. equity markets, around 20% or so, depending on how you define the technology sector. I think next week will be the big potential catalyst for equities in either direction.
Okay, it's a total switch of gears here, but I just think it needs to be flagged because it was a speech that I think has major long-term implications. We're not going to have a robust discussion of this today, but I'm hoping to get Steen Jakobsen in tomorrow or certainly this week to have a discussion about a speech from ECB President Lagarde, which was delivered yesterday to the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a think tank, U.S.-based, slightly more than 100-year-old think tank, so quite a prominent one, on, and the title of the speech was Central Banks in a Fragmenting World. You can see on slide 3, if I remember, I will provide the link to the speech, or you can Google it in the show notes. But this speech ranging on everything from the need for central banks to be interdependent and not completely independent, and making references, as I highlight there on slide 3, that the Federal Reserve and the ECB, within their respective mandates, were proactive, quote, in providing offshore liquidity when recent crises have hit. This is an obvious veiled reference to the bailing out of the UK gilt market when there was no buyer. The subsequent Rishi Sunak regime sending all the right signals to right the ship there. But this speech ranging on everything from that to the fragmenting world, the same word we used in our Q2 outlook, which you need to have a look at as well for that theme, and how central banks will have to react. And I think most interesting was the whole idea of the fiscal side and the signal here. And it sort of shows that I think, and this speech doesn't come out of the blue. This is not Lagarde's personal opinion. This is some sort of, it's almost like a Jackson Hole style speech where you're seeing some thinking revealing what the big debate is among the, you know, among the powers that be. And that's the bottom quote on the right there. So if the quote is, if fiscal and structural policies focus on removing supply constraints created by the new geopolitics, in other words, this whole fragmenting of, you know, we're trying to avoid too much dependencies in our supply chains, for example, on China, if we're not in a security arrangement that favors China and vice versa, quote, we could then see a virtuous circle if we invest in that, of lower volatility, et cetera, et cetera. But if fiscal policy instead focuses mainly on supporting incomes to offset cost pressures, i.e. what we did during the pandemic, then we'll have higher inflation, increased borrowing costs, and lower investment and new supply. So, and of course, and the usual encouragement to deepen the integration of the European Union. Have a look at the speech. I'll talk about the implications of it hopefully in days to come. All right. Moving swiftly along, Peter, it is earnings season. You've put up this chart here on slide 4, something I think we'll be tracking as earnings season wears on where basically the consensus estimates are for earnings for this quarter and the next quarter and the coming couple of quarters after that, and the trajectory there, which is obviously very important when equities operate and trade on forward expectations.
Yeah, and we based it. We based it off the 16th of February, because that's where you roll over to the second half of the Q1 calendar year. And that's, so every earnings release that are released after that date will be in the Bloomberg terminal allocated to the Q1 earnings. And that's how it works on the calendar. So if your fiscal year ends after the 16th of February, then it counts for that. So that's why we have said that, that point there. And we base it as well as a percentage change from that starting point to give an idea of what is happening to these expectations. As you can see here, the expectation for earnings in the S&P 500 for the second quarter and third quarter, very important because it's part of the outlooks that are coming out from companies these days. They have trended lower, but they hit a bottom just days before the big Friday's U.S. banking earnings. And we can see that there has been a little bit bump up there in expectations for Q2 and Q3. You know, we're still lower than where they were just 2 months ago, but it seems like some of the bleeding, at least here in the short term, has stopped. And then look at that fourth quarter expectation that has actually risen. So it almost feels a little bit like the, but with a different signal, but a little bit like the forward curve on monetary policy. So you have this weakness for the next two couple of quarters, and the market or analysts are really expecting things to have been improving when we get to the fourth quarter. And I was also looking at the difference in the expectation between Q4 and where we are right now in Q2, and that's a 6.5% earnings growth. I think that's still a very steep expectation to deliver in, unless, of course, the empire figures yesterday from the US is suggestive of what is potentially to come, namely that, you know, the economy will begin accelerating because of the impulse coming out of China.
Yeah, and again, it's important just to raise the question around the Empire Manufacturing Survey. We can't draw too many conclusions too rapidly, but it is just a very interesting data point. Okay, let's go on to FX. Ole, you're going to have to wait patiently another 30 seconds or a minute. Sorry.
That's okay.
All right. We have with the extension of the yields higher in the US, we did see the dollar. We have seen the dollar strength coming in, but it's we're seeing this rebounding or sort of unwinding, if you will, coming into today. I think one thing to take away longer term here, not day to day, from Lagarde's speech is if we are moving towards some sort of interdependence and semi-coordinated activity among the major allied powers, in the West and into Japan, et cetera, then you would expect there would be some convergence in Bank of Japan monetary policy. So I think that would be a longer-term theme to look for. So something like euro yen and even dollar yen, mean reverting to something resembling maybe a 50-month-plus moving average is a consideration or something to think about. Otherwise, I think the day-to-day, what we've seen here is a dollar rally. It's based on treasury yields having been shifted higher, shift in Fed expectations. We're going to see the need to see the next round of U.S. data and whether that big move in U.S. yields extends and whether we break out of this sort of choppy pattern. So I think we need another follow-through leg lower before we really put in a top here, for example, in the euro-dollar chart I show there. Similar situation at Uli for gold. We've seen a pretty spiky top there. It stopped what was about 1% short in dollar terms of the all-time high in gold. It's tumbled off those highs, but I mean, we are still sitting atop a pretty significant move there from the March lows.
We are indeed, but right now what we're seeing silver coming down quite a bit is testing the $25 area. So silver has dropped quite a bit. So that's potentially showing the way. But overall, it just looks like we are in consolidation mode now with the dollar strength, as you mentioned, John, yields moving higher, and also simply the market being forced to adjust their rate cut expectations over the coming months. I just put in the SOFR. What do we call it? SOFR.
Secured overnight. Yeah, the SOFR. Just call it SOFR. Yeah, it's the SOFR. It's the new LIBOR.
Exactly.
It's a little bit lower because it's not based on unsecured lending like LIBOR was. It's based on essentially treasury collateral.
Exactly. But just highlighting the spreads we've seen there recently, the June DEX spread, the top one. So rate cut expectations from June to the end of the year has dropped from around 80 basis points to now below 60. And also, if you look 1 year out, we're also seeing the rate cut expectation drift lower. And obviously, that could continue. That trend could continue if the data in the coming days continues to support some underlying strength in the economy. So we are in consolidation, as I mentioned. The risk is potentially down to 1957. If we break that 21-day moving average, that shows a loss of momentum, and that could take it down to 1957. So we'll need to watch the dollar and the yields for further guidance on that front. Moving on to another market where we're also seeing some attempt to reverse this time lower. This time higher. It's in wheat. We talked about it from time to time, but increasingly it looks like we are trying to at least attempt to make a bottom here in the market, both CBOT, Chicago wheat, and Paris milling wheat. The pop higher we've seen over the past couple of sessions has been driven by fresh Ukraine export concerns, with the shipments basically needed to be controlled and checked out by the Russians, and they are slowing that process, or that process is grinding to a halt. At the same time, Ukraine has been sending wheat through the back door into Europe, so countries like Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia they have imposed a temporary halt to import simply because their own domestic suppliers are being squeezed with lower prices. So it overall highlights a market where there's still an abundant amount of supply, but with the grain corridor potentially being threatened here, as I suppose part of that is also simply Russia still wants to get rid of their own wheat ahead of the next season, then that could potentially provide some support for the market. Just remember the short in the Chicago wheat is still at a five-year high, so plenty of shorts to be covered if we should see any acceleration to the upside.
Okay, earnings season, Peter. We have stocks to watch today. They're on slide 8. What is your focus? And I want to talk about that Apple story once you've talked about it as well.
Yeah, if we start in Europe first, we've had earnings from Ericsson. Ericsson is a 5G mobile equipment maker, and very much in focus, Ericsson and Nokia, because of the trade tensions between the US and China in the early days. And when I say early days, it's around 6-7 years ago. There's a lot of focus on Huawei. Huawei was making grounds in the global telecommunication world with their equipment, which was pretty stable but also very cheap. But concerns from the US about different components of their software creating a backdoor, etc., caused this nervousness over Huawei. And then as the US-China relationship continued to deteriorate, and the U.S. pressured its European allies to shift away from Huawei, things got moving, and Ericsson and Nokia are the two key providers of 5G networks, but also outside Europe. And Ericsson, which has been sliding lower for almost 2 years, it's not a very impressive price chart when you look at it here at slide 8. But you know, some of the headline results is that headlines on the result Q1 result is that it's a mixed. But I think it's very positive to see that the operating margin actually beat expectations for Q1, and they also saying that the CapEx on 5G is steady, and they're highlighting India without going into a lot of detail. They're just highlighting that India's growth is looking quite solid and robust there. And then EasyJet, another more clear positive story here in the early session, European session, shares are up 3% or more, I think, actually. Future booking levels are looking very, very strong. So they're basically mimicking what we have seen from Delta Airlines and other airliners as well. They're projecting a fiscal year profits of £260 million, which is firmly above the current estimate. So very good and very strong indication from EasyJet. They're even saying that the final quarter of the fiscal year has a booking of 30%, indicating that's higher than normal, and that quarter is a couple of quarters ahead here. So very strong. And then, John, as you said, this Apple partnership with Goldman Sachs to introduce a 4.15% yielding checking account. Can you explain to me, and maybe it's because I'm just a dumb equity guy, but with where the yields, okay, I know the yield curve is inverted, but it's how can you make a lot of money on this? They're almost passing all the potential yield in that end of the yield curve to the customers.
Well, if you can earn a guaranteed, let's say the yield is close to 5%, which it is for the shorter term, 6 month plus area, because we're expecting the Fed to hike once, at least once more, which would be beyond 5% for the very shortest term here. And that rate could obviously change from day to day. I'm not sure how long the rate of 4.15% is guaranteed. But if it is, as you wrote there, I'm very confused, because a checking account is a demand deposit. In other words, your customer can at any time spend the money that's in that account. Normally, when you lock up these higher yields, it would be in something like a certificate of deposit, which sort of says you can't touch this money for 3 to 6 months, or sometimes even longer. So it's obviously a bid to get some kind of savings set up with their customers, and they take some kind of 30 basis point, 50 basis point, maybe a little bit more spread on that. Some going to Goldman Sachs, some going to Apple. But how can they not spend the money directly from the account? That confuses me a bit if that's true.
Yeah. That was according to the Wall Street Journal article. So yeah. I suspect that fact is clear. Maybe there is some regulation around why they can't spend directly from their checking account. In any case, what we have heard from Apple is that they want to extend their financial services. They already have a partnership with Goldman Sachs. They're already offering a little bit of financial services to U.S. customers. And I think the overall aim here is for Apple to convert over time the iPhone to become, you know, a digital wallet. And I would presume that includes that you can spend the money directly from that account in the future, but that doesn't seem to be the focus right now. And of course, you're right, John. I mean, the short term interest rates in the US, of course, is above the 4.15. So there is a little bit of a yield difference there, and that has to be, you know, divided between Apple and Goldman Sachs. What I'm curious about, I don't think it will really move the needle a lot for Apple's business. So, but you know, given these markets and the animal spirits, then maybe Apple shares will rise on it. But I think it will be more interesting to see how U.S. banks are being impacted on this, because we already know there is funding pressure, and that's also what we have seen in the Charles Schwab results yesterday. So with this, if Apple, with their size, could that really change the future conditions even more for deposits and the funding of banks? So that's what we're going to find out today. And then we've moved to the next slide, on slide 9. Bank of America, talking about banks, is up today. We already know from JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup what to expect from Bank of America. So I don't think it will be a big market mover. I expect Bank of America to have gained, on a relative basis, just like JP Morgan, more of all that deposit that was flowing away from smaller banks into big banks. So I think Bank of America. But what we're watching here is, of course, the outlook, because Bank of America is the biggest consumer bank in the U.S.
and traditionally based from the West Coast. It had its heyday, or started in San Francisco, if I'm not mistaken. So there could be an angle on that, simply because of the geography of where the Silicon Valley Bank situation happened.
Yeah, we need to as well talk about Netflix. So Bank of America and also Johnson & Johnson, a big company, of course, in terms of market cap. They're both reporting before the market opens, and then Netflix is after the market close. And I've put in some quarterly financials here, a small snippet on slide 9. So you can see how, you know, revenue growth bottomed out in Q4, only 2% revenue growth there, and it's expected to slowly increase. And by the time we get to Q3, we'll have 10%, 11% revenue growth again for Netflix. So they have done three things, as I wrote in my equity update yesterday. So they're cutting down on original content production, which will free up and lower the net required investments in the future. They have, you know, put constraints on how you can share a password among multiple users, and that's, of course, to increase monetization. And the third leg is the advertising model, as we have talked about on this podcast a couple of months back. That new advertising model means that you can offer Netflix content for free, but then they have to watch advertising, and that is hugely important, I think, for Netflix to push into lower income countries around the world. So and it also offers a potential lower scaling model as well for lower income families in the US. They might save a little bit of money on their subscription and then opting in for advertising instead. So I think it's a very compelling new business leg for Netflix. And I think the expectations going into this earnings release, they're very low. So I actually think that Netflix could surprise to the upside on their financials.
Yeah, certainly a lot underway from them. Let's look at the macro calendar. It's not much to look at, really, today's calendar. Slide 10, we have the U.S. housing starts and building permits. After yesterday, the NAHB did bounce a little bit more, as was expected, to a reading of 45 from the prior 44, but it's still at very low levels relative to the range of the past several years. Canadian CPI and some testimony from Bank of Canada Governor Macklem should be a focus for the Canadian dollar, as well as if there's any follow-up move in oil prices. A Fed speaker, and I think very interesting, there's some exhortation in ECB Lagarde's speech yesterday on the need to transition to digital currencies, central bank digital currencies. The U.S. Fed's Bowman, who is a Board of Governors member and therefore a voter, will be speaking on that topic, as well as the API weekly crude oil and crude oil and fuel stocks report up later in the session. Again, important CPI data rolling in coming days. UK tomorrow, New Zealand the next day, and Friday we get the Japanese inflation data. All right, that is a wrap for today. We will see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.